Elena est titulaire d'un doctorat d'État de l'Université d'État de Moscou et elle a été une des figures importantes du droit du travail à l'Université de Moscou. Elle a rejoint très récemment l'OIT après avoir été fellow à l'Institut d'études avancées de Nantes. Et actuellement, elle est à Fidji, donc elle est venue depuis Fidji. Mais elle est considérée comme une des meilleures spécialistes des évolutions du droit du travail en Russie. Et elle a publié, alors ses publications sont beaucoup en russe, je vois des choses en anglais quand même, et il y a des publications sur la représentation des travailleurs dans les pays d'Europe centrale qui ont été publiées par Walter Kluvers, un éditeur bien connu, chez Droit et Business. Bon, Elena, it's up to you now.
Merci beaucoup, Alain, et merci beaucoup pour l'invitation de parler ici. Et malheureusement, pour moi, c'est tout en français aussi. I'm sorry I can't speak in French longer. Hope some next time it will be much better. In my presentation, I'm trying to focus on two blocks of questions. It is called role of work and its normative regulation in Russia between Soviet roots and modern global challenges. I'm trying to look at the history of Russian labor relations and labor law, find out what is influencing the current situation in Russia from our history, and analyze also from the point of view of those challenges which are discussed now at this conference and just a broader number of challenges, how Russia is able to answer those challenges with the background which we have after the Soviet period. And when we think about this background, historical background of Russia, about, I called that Soviet roots, what are these Soviet roots? Usually people do consider, the history of Russian labor law and labor relations in a rather positive perspective, thinking that the socialist period was comparatively good and positive for workers. But it is not so obvious, and it is not so easy to say that we do have this very nice and positive experience from one side. And at the other side, we do have a lot of nice experiences from pre-revolutionary, pre-Soviet period, which probably also could play very positive role in the development of Russian labor relations in 20th century, but they did not, unfortunately. So the first part of my presentation would be also a very short retrospective of the labor relations and regulation. When you think about like what is the work in Russia and what how people do attitude to work today, and why by which factors it is motivated, I would say it's of course not only the Soviet history, it's also a number of other reasons which are still influencing. It is climate and geographical position. And for me, Alan mentioned that I am now positioned in the Pacific area, and I can compare how much really the climate influences the way people do work, their attitude to work, how they feel their labor ethics, etc. In Russia, like huge geographic territory, very severe climate, it just made people to work always historically. So people were able to work and to work hard also. Another very important factor which influenced labor relations in Russia is the existence of serfdom. And sometimes we think that it is not so negative and negative experience as, for example, slavery. But in some sense, I would say that it is probably even worse experience this than slavery, because those people who were in serfdom, it was Russian peasants, it was native people from the Russian land, not taken from somewhere, completely the same group of people as those who owned them. And the attitude to people were very much influenced for a few decades of for a few centuries of serfdom, which was cancelled just in 1861. Then we also should consider that Russians were predominantly Orthodox, and it is very different religious culture than, for example, in Europe, because the attitude to work was not as to really need to work. It was the work had to be done only when it had to be done, not more, not like the holiday was not to work, and when it was possible not to work, people would prefer not to work. And then again, the Soviet experience, when from one side we had very strong, at the ideological level, we had very strong support of work and workers and idea of labor, but at the same time, working people lived in a very poor conditions. The working level, the living level of workers was really low, and actually it was never a prosperous time for Russian workers. Before the revolution, actually the development of positive labor legislation started before the Russian revolution. And end of 19th century, beginning of 20th century, there was the whole big group of laws and regulations which very quickly developed positive attitude and positive regulation of work. So, for example, in Russia, earlier than in many other countries, the work of children was prohibited, and the right to freedom of association was granted to workers. For example, before the October Revolution, fines on workers were prohibited, labor courts were created, and a number of other positive steps were undertaken. After the revolution in 1917, it's really complicated to speak about some very particular one-side experience. It was very diverse, and lots of during different periods, I would say that some positive and some very negative regulations were adopted and experiences happened. For example, I just tried to put in red those positive experiences which were used and are used even now after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and in black or blue those which were, let's say, more negative. And I'll go through all that. So, for example, after the adoption of the first labor code in 1918, the equality and men and women was declared for the first time. Eight hours working day was declared. Minimum vacation was established. At the same time, just a few months after that, lots of steps to almost introduce the forced labor were undertaken, and labor armies, for example, were created, and labor service, obligatory labor service, was imposed on workers. A little later, collective agreements were introduced and allowed. Different ratification of work, like different rates for work regulation, were introduced. There were very positive agreements in their very positive provisions in the new labor code of 1922, as for example, change of working condition with the consent of employee was possible only. And agreement between employer and employee could not worsen the situation of employee comparing to law. So these are some positive regulations. But then we see that with the beginning of industrialization, labor laws and labor regulation is becoming more and more severe for workers, though at the same time we see that labor and work generally is glorified more and more and ideologized more and more. So government is starting using these positive rhetorics about the use of labor and work in all the discourses, in all the documents. But from the point of view of workers' position, we see that labor law is reoriented to support, first of all, industrial achievements. And many provisions are becoming more restrictive for workers. For example, it is an easy procedure to use workers for extra hours and on weekends introduced. Then in 1933, there is a prohibition to improve working conditions comparing to law introduced, et cetera, et cetera. For example, in Central Asia, at this time, the wide use of child labor is developing, which still existed for the whole century. And just recently, ILO organized a campaign on elimination of child and forced labor on cotton in Central Asian countries, which already independent for a number of years. For example, labor books were introduced with which Russia is still living. And as one of the features which I'll mention separately, in 1930, the system of Gulag labor camps, almost very close to concentration camps, was created. And it was people who were working in those camps, it was a huge part of the workforce in Soviet Union, usually hidden, usually never mentioned and never discussed as a part of the labor market. Of course, there was no labor market, but it was like really a huge group of people who were working to develop the Soviet economy. And as I already mentioned, like officially we had this ideology of glorification of labor. And for example, just this photo from Paris from 1933 for the international exhibition, there were two pavilions presented by Germany and Russia, and the Russian one had the figure of worker and kolkhoz woman, which is the symbol of like working people, and this was the faces, this was the figures which introduced and represented the Soviet country for the whole world. And also, if you look at their artworks of that period, for example, these posters, everywhere you will see that working people are promoted, that work is promoted and glorified, and like from the official point of view, you would always think that for the Soviet government, worker is the central figure, the central person in the whole ideology and culture. At the same time, that photo presents that like really working conditions were and the real situation of working people was really, really hard and the level of life was very poor. And if to mention a few words about this Gulag system, even now we don't know exactly how many people participated in this system. It is, according to some research, it is about 30 million of people who went through Gulag system through a few decades. And we don't know exactly how many people just died there, but on some estimations, it's up to 6 million people who just died working. And usually people who came to these Gulag camps, they were absolutely innocent. They were considered to be usually political criminals, but though, of course, in majority of cases, there were no real grounds for criminal cases, to start criminal cases against these people. And actually, the huge part of the Soviet economy was built and developed by these people who had no any rights, who were completely outside of the regulation of labor law, positive or negative. And actually it was like obvious, of course, obvious forced labor. Just some more photos and maps presenting the number of the camps in this Gulag system. And you can just imagine the scale, the number of people working there. Before the World War II, actually the labor law was also very developing very severe and restrictive phase. And for example, criminal liability was introduced for any type of violation at work, any type of even minor disciplinary violations. Workers were prohibited to leave from their working places. Many groups, like millions, 18 millions of people were mobilized to work. Of course, it was not even a discussion about freedom to work, right to work. It was a clear, obvious obligation and duty to work. Only after 50s, already about 5, 6, 7 years after the end of the World War II, it is the beginning of more or less a warm period, so-called humanization of labor law in the Soviet Union, when economic situation is slowly becoming better. And then at that time, the shorter working hours were introduced. Trade union rights were expanding. Though, of course, you need to remember that trade unions in the Soviet Union, it was something completely different from Western unions. It was a part of the state system, very closely connected with political party, with ruling party. And they were never independent and never played the same role as really representatives of workers' rights and interests. So they were very much included into the system, state system of governance. The system of individual labor disputes was reintroduced. Labor contract was reintroduced, etc., etc. So a number of like positive changes happened, and labor relations became a little more human. Though at the same time, always, not as in United States, I would say there were never periods where workers would really feel that they have decent and prosperous level of life. So even if it was not very severe and cruel conditions, it was always very low level of life and very modest working and living conditions. Which, but at the same time, again, this is the period when government is again very much paying attention at glorifying labor, promoting workers of different qualifications and different types of works. And if you look at the old period of the Soviet Union before the collapse of the USSR, we come again to the situation that work was considered to be the right, but at the same time, it was always an obligation. Forced labor, even at the end of the Soviet time, still was used. There were almost no any effective mechanisms to protect labor rights. Collective labor relations existed only as in a very specific form, because like there were no real collective bargaining, no any strikes, and trade unions again were representing the state views and interests of political party. So trade unions were quite decorative, I would say. But as a positive side of all that, the situation was stable. People hoped that they have like a brighter future in their perspective. And there were a number of indirect benefits which made this feeling of stable relationships. Then the Soviet Union collapsed. It was also the end of the stable labor relations. People lost their jobs, lost their salaries. And if you look at how the labor relations developed lately, I would say a few main things I want to mention. Well, first, trade unions. Formally, Russia still has trade unions, and they're still massive. But as soon as we never had traditions of strong independent unions, those 20 million of members of FNPR, for example, official former Soviet unions, they're very passive. They don't really able to become such a driving force as, for example, those people who organize various campaigns in United States or in Europe. So these are people who would never go to streets and protest. So this is very like passive part of the society. We have the concept of tripartite, social partnership introduced. And this concept, from one side, all the institutions of this tripartite system are very well developed, and the tripartite board meets regularly, and all the laws should be discussed there. But when you look at the results, how really effective this system is, we find that unfortunately, the influence of this mechanism on real decision making is very, very low. So actually, government is just making those decisions which they consider to be needed. The level of social activity is very low. The number of official strikes is very low, from 0 to 8 per year. But protests which are unofficial goes beyond the law. Wildcat strikes and other forms of protest, they happen often, but they're totally out of control of trade unions. And I also want to look at how Russia, in this situation, deals with modern global challenges, which we are discussing in this conference, with environmental, technological, and institutional challenges, and whether there are some other challenges present. So I would say that, unfortunately, no reason to be proud of some comprehensive policies in these questions, in finding solutions for these challenges. So with environmental challenges and ecological danger, I would say that it is not a question not in agenda at all. No any policies are discussed from the point of view of, officially we do have ecological policies, of course, and some state programs, but they do not really influence the real behavior of enterprises or of some regions on how to develop industries, how to improve production and factories, for example. As just a few features, I want to give an interesting example. We still do have a list of professions which are prohibited for women, which has 456 professions prohibited for women because they're hazardous and dangerous, and men have to work there. So there is no state policy that just the type of this profession should be like changed really, and working conditions should be changed there. The idea and the national policy is that men should go and work there because we are prohibiting women from working in dangerous conditions. And as one of the consequences of this policy is the fact that men live 11 years, in average, 11 years less than women in Russia. The same, almost the same situation with digitalization. I would say that this, though there are some challenges on digitalization, this is the question which is not really discussed, and some regulation in labor law which is addressing, for example, working conditions of teleworkers or those workers who work outside of the standard employment relationship. And we are also find ourselves in a situation when, from one side, at the presidential level, the policy, pro-worker policy, is declared in words, but at the same time, when you look at the decisions and acts which are adopted and at the policy which is really taken by and which is announced by economic experts in Russia, it is very much neoliberal discourse which finds no any place and space for pro-worker, real pro-worker regulation, and Ministry of Labor and all the social bloc becoming weaker and weaker. And actually I would say that within last 10 years, the social state was really destroyed in Russia because all the social systems, very well developed during the Soviet time, they were all undermined and de facto very slowly canceled. So There are other challenges which I'll not mention. I understand that I'm going too low, but I would say that the pity if, for example, in a situation with United States, there were this very bright, very inspiring picture of grassroots movements which are developing and probably give a hope for future. I would say that in Russian context, I don't see, and not only me, unfortunately, we don't see perspectives for, there is no state policy which is addressing global challenges, and also no any grassroots initiatives, just because all the grassroots initiatives are due to political system destroyed within the latest 10, 15 years. So for me, there is a huge, huge change question whether there is any vision of labor relations in Russia existing in someone's mind at their political level, at the social level. So it looks like just Russia is going somewhere, not quite being sure where exactly, without clear policy on this issue. And who knows where it will come. Thank you.